Welcome to Christ Church Manchester Sermon Podcast. CCM is one church that meets every Sunday in various locations across Manchester. For more information about who we are or about our Sunday meetings, please visit www.christchurchmanchester.com. My home is not on this
earth, not in this world. Right, so good morning, everybody. So today we are going to be continuing our series in Exodus that we started a few weeks ago. And the main theme that I want to look at this morning is journeying through disappointment. But before we get into the passage this morning, just by show of hands, who here has been to Chester Zoo before? Yeah, quite a good number of you actually. So it's an amazing zoo. It's really good. If you haven't been, I'd highly recommend that you would go. The last time me and Rosalind were there was a few weeks ago. Over Easter, so my sister, brother-in-law, and my little nephew, two-year-old nephew Zach, came up and we went to Chester Zoo. Now, currently, Zach is a big fan of the film Madagascar. I think we've got a picture. He just loves this film at the moment. And those that know this film well will know that there are four main characters. So there's Alex the lion, there's Marty the zebra, there's Melman the giraffe, and there's Gloria the hippo. So now, watching this film with him for probably the third time in a row, my brother-in-law thought that it would be a good idea to get Zach excited for his upcoming trip to Chester Zoo with Uncle Luke and Auntie Roro. So yeah, Zach can't quite pronounce Rosalind yet. He's getting there, but it's Auntie Roro at the moment. So he thought it'd be a great idea. Let's tell Zach that he is going to see all of his favourite characters from Madagascar. He's going to see them at Chester Zoo. And that will get him really excited. And it did. He got super excited. So they arrive at our house that weekend. I think I've got a picture of the crew. Here we are, we go to Chester Zoo. So they arrive at our house. Zach is so excited. So he's talking about all the animals that he wants to see, but in particular, he wants to see the hippopotamus. That's what he wants to see at Chester Zoo. So for those of you that know Chester Zoo and have been before, you might know how this story will end. So we get there, we see elephants, we see giraffes, we see meerkats, lions, penguins. And I say to Zach, where to next, Zach? Where do you want to go? He said, hippopotamus. He wants to see the hippopotamus. So I've already looked at the map. I've scanned this map hard, and I realise there is no hippopotamus at Chester Zoo. And I'm thinking to myself, how do I break this to my two-year-old nephew that there isn't a hippopotamus? So I say to him, how about a rhinoceros, Zach? It's kind of the same as a hippo. They just don't live in water. But he wasn't buying any of it. So when we get home later, after his nap, he wakes up and we say to him, have you enjoyed your day? What animals did you like seeing? And he said to us, he'd loved it. He got excited again, thinking about all the animals that he'd seen, the monkeys, the bats, the zebras, the butterflies. And then he turns to us all, and I'll never forget this, he turns to us and he just says, but no hippopotamus. And he was so, so disappointed, devastated. So this is a very trivial example, but disappointment is something that affects us all. So we all have plans in our mind, how we think things will go, how we want things to go. Maybe it's a career that we've always wanted, or an age we want to get married, or we've got hopes, dreams and aspirations. And when it doesn't quite go that way, or how we'd planned it, we are disappointed. And disappointment is always rooted in hope. You can't be disappointed if you first didn't hope. So when I was applying for university, back when I was 18, I had my hopes set on Loughborough University. That's where I wanted to go. In my mind, that's where I'm going. I planned it all out in my head. And I was told by the university, if I didn't meet the grades to get on the master's course, that I'd automatically get put on the bachelor's course and that I could bump up at university if I wanted to. So I thought, great, I'm going to go to Loughborough. And I worked incredibly hard for my A-levels and was over the moon on results day when I received the grades. So I didn't quite get onto the master's course, but I'd got the grades to get on the bachelor's course. I thought, great, I'm going to Loughborough. So I thought, right, I'll just get onto the UCAS website just to check, just to make sure, expecting there to be like a congratulations message, you've got into Loughborough. But there wasn't. It was the opposite. I thought, oh, this must be a mistake. This must be a mistake. So I ring the university directly and explain everything to them. And I can still remember the feeling of the wind just being knocked out of me when they say to me, no, you've not got into Loughborough. We've oversubscribed this year. I couldn't attend Loughborough. My options were to defer a year or to choose somewhere else. So at that moment, I felt like a failure. I felt disappointment just swept in. So disappointment is it's an emotion that can shatter dreams, it can diminish hope, it can make us feel like a failure like I did, it can make us feel lonely. So especially when social media just kind of hits you in the face with everything positive that's going on in everyone else's life. so it can knock our confidence. So you may have recently received some bad news or had the rug pulled out from under you. A decision may have gone differently to what you're expecting, or you might just be in a period of hardship right now. And the passage we're going to read this morning, it's seeped in disappointment. So I'm hoping together that we can learn some lessons to take from it. So it's quite a deep topic this morning, but I feel it's an important one to cover. So bear with me as we go through it. So just a recap of where we've got to so far in Exodus. So a surprising amount has happened in the first four chapters. So the Israelites, or the Hebrew people, are living in Egypt, and their numbers growing rapidly. And the Egyptian government at the time, they're getting nervous about this growth in population. So they start oppressing the Hebrews. So they make them their slaves, and then they eventually take it up a notch, and they kill all the baby boys, the firstborn baby boys, from the Hebrews. So this is where Moses comes along. Moses is born, and after a quick trip down the river in a basket, he is saved by Pharaoh's daughter, and he grows up as the prince of Egypt. So then one day Moses is out and he sees some Egyptian people beating some Hebrews, some of his own people. So he steps in and he actually kills one of the Egyptians. And when he finds out that people know what he did and Pharaoh is out to kill him, he flees to Midian. But the people of the Israelites in Egypt, they're still being oppressed. They cry out to God and God hears them. So God speaks to Moses, and that's where we get the burning bush. That's God speaks to Moses through the burning bush. And so he says to Moses, go back to Pharaoh. And he promises to be with Moses. And Moses is still unsure at this moment, so God gives him some signs. As we heard last week, he can turn his staff into a snake. He gives Moses leprosy on his hand, then removes it again. And then says, pour water out from the Nile, and I will turn it to blood. So despite all of that, Moses, with all his insecurities, still says, I need help. So God finally agrees to send Aaron, who is his brother, with him, and together they head back to Egypt. And that's where we get to in today's passage. So we're going to read from Exodus 4:29 through to chapter 6, verse 2. So if you've got your Bibles, please turn to it, or it will come up on the screen as well. So chapter 4, verse 29. Moses and Aaron brought together all the elders of the Israelites. And Aaron told them everything the Lord had said to Moses. He also performed the signs before the people, and they believed. And when they heard that the Lord was concerned about them and had seen their misery, they bowed down and worshipped. Afterwards, Moses and Aaron went to Pharaoh and said, this is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. Let my people go, so that they may hold a festival to me in the wilderness. Pharaoh said, who is the Lord that I should obey him and let Israel go? I do not know the Lord, and I will not let Israel go. Then they said, the God of the Hebrews has met with us. Now let us take a three-day journey into the wilderness to offer sacrifices to the Lord our God, or he may strike us with plagues or with the sword. But the king of Egypt said, Moses and Aaron, why are you taking the people away from their labor? Get back to your work. Then Pharaoh said, look, the people of the land are now numerous, and you are stopping them from working. That same day, Pharaoh gave this order to the slave drivers and overseers in charge of the people. You are no longer to supply the people with straw for making bricks. Let them go and gather their own straw, but require them to make the same number of bricks as before. Don't reduce the quota. They are lazy. That's why they are crying out, let us go and sacrifice to our God. Make the work harder for the people so that they keep working and pay no attention to lies. Then the slave drivers and the overseers went out and said to the people, this is what Pharaoh says. I will not give you any more straw. Go and get your own straw wherever you can find it, but your work will not be reduced at all. So the people scatter all over Egypt to gather stubble to use for straw. The slave drivers kept pressing them, saying, complete the work required of you each day, just as when you had straw. And Pharaoh's slave drivers beat the Israelite overseers they had appointed, demanding, why haven't you met your quota of bricks yesterday or today as before? Then the Israelite overseers went and appealed to Pharaoh, why have you treated your servants this way? Your servants are given no straw, yet we are told, make bricks. Your servants are being beaten, but the fault is with your own people. Pharaoh said, lazy, that's what you are, lazy. That is why you keep saying, let us go and sacrifice to the Lord. Now get to work. You will not be given any straw, yet you must produce your full quota of bricks. The Israelite overseers realized they were in trouble when they were told, you are not to reduce the number of bricks required of you each day. When they left Pharaoh, they found Moses and Aaron waiting to meet them. And they said, may the Lord look on you and judge you. You have made us obnoxious to Pharaoh and his officials, and have put a sword in their hand to kill us. Moses returned to the Lord and said, "Why, Lord, have you brought trouble on this people? Is this why you sent me? Ever since I went to Pharaoh to speak in your name, he has brought trouble on this people, and you have not rescued your people at all." Then the Lord said to Moses, "Now you will see what I will do to Pharaoh. Because of my mighty hand, he will let them go. Because of my mighty hand, he will drive them out of this country." God also said to Moses, "I am the Lord." So here we have Moses and Aaron returning back to the people with good news. God has spoken, he has heard the cry of the people, and he's going to deliver them. And Moses has some cool signs to show them as well. And as we heard last week, they have some significance. The snake being a symbol of Egypt, leprosy being a disease the Egyptians couldn't cure at the time, and the Nile being a source of wealth and power to the Egyptians. So these aren't just cool signs. God is demonstrating his might and power over Egypt. The Israelites are getting excited. Great, at last. God has heard us. Things are going to get better. But as we've just read, suddenly they are hit with disappointment. Things get even worse. This isn't how it was meant to go. "Hey, Moses, I thought you said God was going to deliver us. What about those signs that you showed us?" And put yourself in Moses' shoes. He goes from being the prince of Egypt to a shepherd in Midian. As we heard last week, he had a lot of insecurities to overcome before finally agreeing to go back to Egypt. Throughout chapter 3 and 4, he wrestles with God, saying, "Who am I? What shall I tell them? What if they don't believe me? I have never been eloquent." God patiently took Moses on a journey and ministered reassurance to him, to the point where Moses was finally prepared to go back to Egypt. And then in chapter 5, Moses fails again. Pharaoh made things even worse for the Hebrews, and Israel wanted nothing to do with him. So I think it's important to recognise this morning and acknowledge that we'll face failure, hardship and disappointment in this life. And no one likes to talk about disappointment or failure. And whilst we shouldn't dwell on it, I don't think it's helpful or healthy just to brush over it either. If we read the Bible honestly, we see many examples of faithful men and women whose plans don't turn out how they expected. So take Joseph, for example, sold into slavery by his own brothers and then ends up in prison for something he didn't even do. Or John the Baptist, the messenger sent ahead of Jesus to prepare the way, and who Jesus refers to as the greatest person ever to have lived. He finds himself in prison and is eventually killed for obeying God and rebuking Herod's choice of relationships. And I hate to spoil the end of Exodus for you as well, but Moses doesn't make it to the promised land. And I'm not going to try and tackle the why question in this sermon. There's not time for that this morning. But I think the Bible is clear that we will face disappointments and trials in this life. But I want to look at 3 points that I hope will help us when we find ourselves journeying through disappointment. So they come to God with honesty, remember who he is, and keep going. So first of all, come to God with honesty. Moses cried out to God at the end of our passage. Verse 22, it says, "Moses returned to the Lord and said, 'Why, Lord, have you brought trouble on this people? Is this why you sent me? Ever since I went to Pharaoh to speak in your name, he has brought trouble on this people, and you have not rescued your people at all.'" So first, the come to God part. So when things turned south for Moses before, and Pharaoh was out to kill him, he fled. When things went wrong, he ran away. And how easy is it for us to do the same? Hardship and disappointment come, and it often feels easiest to just try and escape it all, to flee. We look to other things to try and get control for ourselves, or to seek happiness, or to try and just forget our current situation. And when I say that, you might automatically think I'm referring to alcohol or drugs. And it might be these things, but it could also be overindulging in food, going on a shopping spree, booking a holiday. Subtle things that on the face of it look harmless, but if we're honest, have actually taken the place of God when hardship and disappointment comes. Rather than turning to him, we turn to other things. And I was trying to think of an example in my own life, but I'll admit I've not really kind of been off the rails before after disappointment. And if I'm honest, I don't think I've really suffered much disappointment in my life, especially compared to others. But I can definitely think of small examples. So numerous times I've had a tough day at work, a particularly difficult meeting, and I get home and I just fancy a beer. So I'm not talking about getting wasted, just a beer, just one beer. Or me and Rosalind both get home after a stressful day at work. We order a takeaway, just shove on a film, just to forget about everything. Now a beer, a takeaway, a film, these aren't bad things. But the subtlety here is that they've replaced God. So instead of coming to him, we use these things as a means of escape. Now look at verse 22 again. Moses has just failed again, and what does it say? Moses returned to the Lord. Things had gone wrong, but now Moses came straight back to God. And this is so important, guys. Our default needs to be turning back to God. And I'll be completely honest with you, and this might sound bad, but there have been plenty of Wednesday evenings when we host our prayer night, when me and Roslyn get home and we just say to each other, should we just cancel prayer tonight? Should we just grab a Domino's? But I tell you what, those evenings when we do still go ahead with prayer and we meet with God, we come into his presence, we feel so much better for it. He ministers so much to us, and we say afterwards to each other, I'm so glad we still had prayer tonight. I really needed just to spend some time with God. And it might be that you come to God, get your sustenance from him, then he says to you, go have that beer, watch that film, enjoy. But our first thought needs to be coming to God. And I really feel as well, the more we do it in the small things, the more instinctive it will be when big disappointments come our way. So let's get in the habit of coming to God first and foremost when disappointment comes. So and then come to God with honesty. You'll notice Moses left nothing unsaid. He comes to God and completely passes the blame. Why have you? He felt like God hadn't shown up. He shows God he is angry and frustrated. And I think this is another huge lesson for us. It's important to remember that we can cry out to God. We can approach him with our honesty and our raw emotions. And that's what he wants. He wants us to be honest with him. He is God, creator of the universe. He can handle it. The important part is Moses' return to the Lord. That's what God wants from us. He wants us to return to him. Whatever emotions are flying around, whatever questions we have, whatever insecurities, God can deal with them and provide comfort. But he can only do that if we return to him. I feel we can be too British when we approach God as well. So I'll let you into a secret. When I pray to God, I form prayers in my head before I actually pray them to him. And it sounds crazy. How ludicrous does that sound? If I'm angry, I take some time to calm down from my anger. I iron out my choice of words. Or I try and be polite before coming to God, because I feel God might get offended. That's not what Moses did. Moses just lays it all out on the line. He comes to God with all his frustrations, all his hurt, all his pain. And if Moses had actually taken some time to think about it, he'd have remembered that God told him previously that this would happen, that Pharaoh's heart would be hardened. But that's the point. God doesn't want us to figure everything out and then approach him. He wants us to come warts and all into his presence. So come to God with honesty. Secondly, remember who he is and what he has done. So at the first sign of opposition, Moses forgets all the signs and the encounters with God at the burning bush. All he is aware of is his current crisis. And we're not different, or I'm certainly not. I easily forget all the times God showed up in the past, all the times he sustained me, all the times he encouraged me and showered me in his unending grace. But our experiences of God's faithfulness in the past are crucial to help sustain us in the current time of disappointment. So I'll say that again. Our experiences of God's faithfulness in the past are crucial to help sustain us in the current time of disappointment. So I'd encourage you to spend some time writing down all of the times you've encountered God's presence in the past. Known his love, his grace, his mercies, his encouragement, his support, his peace, his strength, his faithfulness. Write down a list, and when things get difficult, refer back to that list. Remind yourself of who he is. So I think I have a tendency not only to forget God's faithfulness in the past, but also to forget who God is. Jesus says in John 16:33, I've told you these things so that in me you may have peace. In this world you will have trouble, but take heart, I have overcome the world. So whatever disappointment you are facing right now, take heart, because Jesus has overcome the world. Whatever hardship you are facing, take heart, Jesus has overcome the world. And every morning we're reminded of God's strength. So if we take the sun for an example, it is 865,000 miles thick, 1.3 million times heavier than the earth, and 1 million degrees Celsius on its surface. Every single morning, God in his strength rises that sun for us above the sky. Let us not forget that when we wake up. And look out to creation as well. Our God designed all of that. So a couple of years ago, I went on a snowboarding trip to Scotland with some friends. So we arrived really late at night, because we travelled up in the evening. Everything was pitch black. All we could see was just the stars in the sky. It was incredible, just watching them. And then we woke up the next day, and in sunlight, we were just surrounded by mountains, snow-topped mountains towering over us. That's why I love spending time in creation. It reminds me how big my God is. Reminds me who I'm putting my trust in. And then take a seed. We've talked about the vast universe in creation. A tiny seed, if planted and nurtured, will grow into a wonderful, intricate tree. Our God is not just the powerful God of the mighty stuff. He's the caring God in the detail too. The caring God concerned with the details of your life and your current disappointment and hardship. How often on a Sunday morning do we worship and sing about how great our God is, his unending love for us, his almighty power? But then when Monday comes around and life with all its struggles and stresses hits, do I still remember and truly believe that God is for me, that he loves me and that he will deliver me? So the Israelites' initial exhilaration in our passage today in Exodus soon turned to disgust. So to provide a bit of context, mixing straw with mud made the bricks stronger and more durable. So up to this point, Pharaoh had supplied the slaves with straw. But now he's saying, go find your own straw and still produce the same number of bricks. So notice how fearful they become. Chapter 5, verse 15 describes how the Israelite foreman appeal to Pharaoh and say, why have you treated your servants this way? At the start of our passage, they're bowing down to God, worshipping God, when they find out that he had heard their cry. But as soon as the oppression is increased, they're fearful of Pharaoh and call themselves his servants. Their eyes were fixed on God, but when oppression comes, their eyes move off God onto their current situation and fear settles in. In Mark 4, Jesus tells the parable of the sower and the seed, which is the word of God. In one of the scenarios, the seed falls on rocky ground where it didn't have much soil. It sprang up quickly, but when the sun came out, the plant scorched and withered because they had no root. So in verse 16, Jesus explains the meaning of this. He says, others hear the word and at once receive it with joy. But since they have no root, they last only a short time. When trouble or persecution comes because of the word, they quickly fall away. That's exactly what happened to the Hebrew people. At the start of our passage, they heard the word from Moses and became joyful. As soon as the hardship increased, they soon fell away and doubted God's ability to deliver them. And if I'm honest, when I read this parable from Jesus, I never really associate myself with this particular seed. I kind of think to myself, I've got a strong faith. I've been a Christian for a number of years. I have deep roots. I wouldn't fall away quickly. But in fact, I'm not sure we'll ever truly know how deep our roots are until we face trouble or persecution. So how do we become more rooted in him? How do we deepen those roots? I think the answer is just to keep our eyes fixed on God. Look at God's response to Moses, chapter 6, verse 1. Then the Lord said to Moses, now you will see what I will do to Pharaoh. Because of my mighty hand, he will let them go. Because of my mighty hand, he will drive them out of his country. And verse 2, God also said to Moses, I am the Lord, or I am Yahweh, the Lord. You see, the Lord doesn't get angry or say, I've reassured you enough, Moses, what more could you want from me? He doesn't rebuke, he doesn't mock. He simply reminds Moses again who he is. I am Yahweh. Let me reassure you again. I am who I am. Remember my name. I haven't changed in these past few days. Moses has just hit rock bottom again after his failure. He's crying out to God, protesting, why did you send me? Things have got worse. You have done nothing to rescue the people. God's response is to draw Moses into his presence, reminding him of who he is, giving him a renewed revelation of himself. Now, none of us want failure or find it easy to admit. It's often easier for us to sit in a corner or say how unfair everything is or beat ourselves up. We can often feel guilt over letting the Lord down. Without realizing it, it is so easy just to shun his presence. Moses does the right thing, promptly gets himself back before the Lord. And the Lord's response is to remind him of who he is. So I had a recent experience of feeling like I had failed God. So I was in a taxi with an architect at work, and the conversation got onto their kids, how they'd recently asked about the tooth fairy and whether the tooth fairy is real. It was around Easter time as well, and their child comes home asking about Jesus, whether he was real. Is he magical like the tooth fairy? And the architect told their child that no one knows if Jesus is real or not. I know Jesus is real. That was a perfect opportunity for me to stand up, declare my belief and love for God, to declare that Jesus is the Son of God, that he died and was raised to life. But I bottled it. I froze. I was too worried about how I might look to others, what this person might think of me. Now, as soon as I got out of the taxi, I regretted my decision straight away. But it was too late. The opportunity had passed. For the rest of the day, I beat myself up, feeling like I had failed God. Lies crept in from the enemy. The week before Easter, the week before your God died for you in your place, and you can't even tell someone that you love him. So my eyes were now not on God, but on my current failure. So I felt small, I felt insecure, I felt I had failed. But on my cycle home, I did come back to God. I poured my heart out to him, told him how sorry I was. And he was there with open arms. He drew me into his presence, reminding me of who he is and his love for me. So now I could have gone the rest of that week playing that scenario round in my head, beating myself up. But after coming to God, fixing my eyes back on him, remembering his love for me, that changed everything. God spoke words of encouragement over me. There's a saying that I really love, and I've mentioned it in previous sermons. When you hit rock bottom, remember who your rock is. But what I've learned recently is even more amazing. When you hit rock bottom, let God remind you who your rock is. Let him draw you in again to his presence and reassure you. He is saying, come linger in my presence. Jeremiah 17, 7-8 tells us, but blessed is the one who trusts in the Lord, whose confidence is in him. They will be like a tree planted by the water that sends out its roots by the stream. It does not fear when heat comes. Its leaves are always green. It has no worries in a year of drought and never fails to bear fruit. So come to God with honesty. Remember who he is and what he has done. And finally, keep going. So there are another 35 chapters left to go in Exodus. And I can tell you now they're far from plain sailing for Moses. But Moses didn't give up here. He didn't give up at the end of chapter 5. He kept going. He was faithfully obedient despite the setbacks and disappointments. And the Lord did not take away or even promise to take away Moses' nervousness or to impart boldness to him. He did, however, call him to a position of trust. You see, if God had changed Moses' characteristics or his situation, Moses would have started to trust in himself and not God. Moses was called to the obedience of faith without seeing any actual change in himself. His speech didn't miraculously improve. He still had his human flaws, but he looked to God and trusted in him and kept going. Moses' initial reaction was, I can't, therefore I won't. But God brought him to a place where he said, I can't, he can, therefore I will. And sometimes we have to wait a while to fully understand what God is doing, why things currently seem harder, and what God's ultimate plan is. It's only years later now that I can see God's hand was at work when I didn't get into Loughborough. My plan B was God's plan A all along. And for the record, God always only has a plan A. I ended up at Sheffield University, where my two accountability partners from Peterborough also ended up. I made a great bunch of friends who respected my faith. I ended up being only away from 1 hour away from Rosalyn when she ended up in Leeds. And being up north meant that I got a job over in Manchester with a Christian manager and a Christian director. And I end up at a fantastic church. It's only now that I can see all of this, and I'm so thankful that God didn't let me get into Loughborough. I wish I could have gone back and told my 18-year-old self on results day that everything would work out for the better. But then again, I think God wanted to teach me something, to ultimately trust in him and his plan. There are other times when we don't find out why certain disappointments come our way. Sometimes God's explanation doesn't become clear, but we're still called to trust him, to be faithfully obedient despite this, and to keep going. And Andy has said it many times before, let's keep plodding, let's keep going. And I love the story in Daniel of Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego. These three were faithful, faithfully obedient, and refused to bow down to worship other gods. And Nebuchadnezzar was furious at this. He said, if you don't bow down to these gods and these idols, I'm going to throw you into a blazing furnace. And check out their response in chapter 3. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God we serve is able to deliver us from it. and he will deliver us from your majesty's hand. But even if he does not, we want you to know that we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold you have set up." What an incredible demonstration of obedience. God can, God will, and even if he doesn't, I will still serve him. Now I'm praying for more of that kind of faith in my life. And just think of the disappointment the disciples must have felt when Jesus died. He was the Saviour, the Son of God. He was meant to come and deliver the people. But seeing him crucified, hanging there on the cross, imagine their disappointment. All hope appeared lost. The plan in their minds had gone terribly wrong. But God's plan never goes wrong. Look how that story ended up. 3 days later, Jesus is raised from the dead. The temple curtain is torn in two. Jesus is now seated at the right hand of God. We are now able to freely approach God. Our sins have been completely washed away. As far as the east is from the west, the slate wiped clean. And in return, we become children of God. We have a hope, a future, eternity in heaven with him. So if right now you're currently facing hardship, disappointment or setback, come to God with honesty. Remember who he is and what he has done for you. Remember Jesus' sacrifice on the cross and keep going, trusting in God and knowing your hope is secure in him.